It's the start of a new year, and for many traditional types, that means going through the traditional ritual of goal setting, turning over a new leaf, pushing out the old, ushering in the new, and setting those bigger-than-life New Year's resolutions that we so traditionally bail on within the first few weeks of the new year. Well, we are not recommending all that, but we are suggesting that this may be a great time to take stock of your family and your responsibilities for that family. This is a parenting program, after all. So for the next several weeks, we're going to answer some of the top questions that parents bring to us. Tough questions about how to raise their teens, in the hopes that we can help you succeed in areas where you and your teens may be having trouble. Our host is Trace Embry. I'm Rich Rosel, and this is License to Parent. Well, if you are a new listener to the program, License to Parent is the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential therapeutic program for teens in crisis. And a large part of what we do here involves not just the teens, but their families. And Trace, each month, parents come here to Shepherd's Hill for a weekend visit with their teens. Many of our listeners may not have known that. And during that visit, you host a workshop where you answer questions of all sorts from parents.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not just me. Sometimes it's my daughter, Allison, actually facilitates a lot of those workshops. And, you know, you're just amazed at sometimes what parents really don't understand about the world that we live in and how it's affecting their kids' brains and their hearts and minds and souls and spirits and things like that. And what seems to be routine for us because we're in it every day isn't always such a common sense thing for a lot of parents today.
But the questions that you get, I should point out, don't just come from these parent weekends.
Right.
I mean, because you're out speaking, you're in churches and meeting with various people in various areas. So you're seeing a lot of these questions happen not only, as we like to say, inside the gates, but outside the gates too.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, we questioned a bunch of our kids one afternoon, and I asked them, I said, you know, kids, you're here because you're supposed to be troubled teenagers. And I said, can I ask you a question? You can just, I mean, I want you to tell me the honest truth.
Right off the top of your head.
Yeah, I didn't brief them at all about this. I said, do you feel like you're any more troubled than any of the other kids that you went to school with? It was unanimous. No, not at all. We're just fortunate enough that our parents intervened to get us to a place like this where we can kind of come outside the forest and see the trees. Now, they didn't use that exact language, but that's really what they were saying. They're no more troubled than the rest of the kids. I think that we live in a time, Rich, where how can our kids possibly be exposed to the things they're exposed to, engaged in the things they're engaged in, virtually 24/7, and sometimes literally 24/7, and not be
affected.
I mean, just last night I was watching a news clip, and it's a guy from ISIS, and he says, "We don't get it. The reason we hate you so much, America, is you are so evil." Now, these are the guys who are lopping off heads because we are evil.
Mm-hmm.
We're so deep into this forest of pornography and disrespect and indulgence and gluttony and abuse and addiction. This has become normal now. I mean, look at our kids, how obese they are, how obese adults are. The rest of the world looks at us like, what is wrong with you people? We are so in the midst of it that we don't realize how odd we look as Americans in a myriad different ways to the rest of the world. And I think that we need to take a good close look at, that's why I keep going back to worldview. If we will have a biblical worldview about not only how we do life, but particularly how we raise our kids, we'll look and see that, man, we got to look at a whole new paradigm shift here.
Yeah.
And that's hopefully what we can accomplish with some of these questions that we get regularly and some answers to them.
And over the next few weeks, as we start the new year, we thought we'd wipe the slate clean and dive in and do this for seasoned listeners and brand new listeners. I'm going to be asking you to answer some of those top questions here on the program. As we say, our goal on License to Parent is to export what we learn inside the gates of Shepherd's Hill outside the gates in order to help you as a parent become more proactive in raising your own children so that you won't need a residential program down the road. I should mention, we're not going to have time to go as deep on some of these answers at this sitting.
Yeah, and they're no particular order either.
Right. These are just some we're going through. But some of these, you know, you may go, well, boy, that was a pretty brief answer they gave. We are going to do our best over the remainder of the year to periodically come back and maybe dive deep on some of these that really need further explanation.
Yeah, because some of our listeners are going to be interested in these particular questions when others are going to be interested in the others.
Right.
You know, so hopefully we'll have something for everyone.
Well, without further ado, this is where we would insert the drum roll, please. Let's start with the first question. What are, and this is from the parents, what are the parents telling you are their biggest fears in raising their kids today?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of them, but the one that comes up very frequently, particularly for teenagers, is, believe it or not, going to jail for disciplining their kids. They feel like...
So the parents aren't worried about their kids going to jail. The parents are worried about...
Them going to jail.
Going to jail themselves.
Well, now, they're definitely worried about their kids going to jail, but, you know, they have careers and they have jobs and things like that, and they have reputations to preserve. And there are a lot of kids who realize that the government really has given them a tremendous lever in Department of Children and Family Services, which I'm all for them. I think that needs to exist because there's genuine abuse that goes on. But abuse is only as good as it's defined. And there are a lot of people out there saying, well, you know, you spank your kids, you've abused your kids. And that's just not true. And I want to blow the lid off of this whole thing for a lot of these parents who are afraid that Junior is going to take the phone and call the local Department of Children and Family Services and have the child removed from the home. And that's parents, their big fear is that they're going to take my kids because they hear those horror stories out there.
Yeah.
But that's not usually the case. Unless you're truly abusing your kids. What parents need to know is that the Department of Children and Family Services has to, by law, investigate every claim.
Sure.
So even a random claim comes in, they have to go out and check. And so kids, they use this as a lever over their parents so that their parents won't exercise discipline on them. And what I want to tell parents is that because parents don't want to go through the embarrassment, the humiliation, the time and energy that it takes to do all this. And when they come knocking on your door, invite them in. And usually 99 times out of 100, the DFACS worker, we call it DFACS here in Georgia, will look at Junior, investigate the situation, talk to the parents, and usually it's Junior, knock it off. Mom and Dad, you're doing a great job. Don't call us back here. And then the cover's blown off of the child's lever that he thinks he has. But that is a big fear for parents. They don't want to go through that. They don't want to be labeled an abusive parent. I mean, could you imagine that, Rich, you know, having that label to live with in your church, in your neighborhood, in your school system? And it's embarrassing enough that this organization would actually show up. Nobody wants that. And I'm saying it may need to happen. You may just need to let
Junior play the bluff out.
Exactly.
And see what happens.
Yeah, and cross that hump and then just deal with it.
Well, quickly talk about the aspect of spanking, though. A lot of people are concerned that spanking is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any state in the United States where it is.
It's legal in all 50 states.
Yeah.
And it's legal in a lot of school systems. The policy that schools have, however, is a lot of them, is not to do it because everyone's afraid of being sued today.
Sure.
And they don't want to be, stuck with the same stigmatism that parents don't want to be stuck with the whole abuse thing. So they just, they put it on the shelf. And there's a case of a guy, I think it's in Aiken, South Carolina, where this principal came into the school, and the school had like the lowest test scores. It had terrible behavior problems. And this guy comes in. He was a young, I think he was like a 29-year-old. I think Newsweek magazine back in 2009, I think, did a big story on it. And this guy sees a paddle up on his cabinet in his office and decides, maybe I'll dust that thing off and start using it. He did turn that school around both behaviorally and academically by using the paddle. Now, that's a true story. And it's not that old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we would point out that there is a big difference between spanking and abusively whopping your kids.
Absolutely.
And we are not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that, you know, you let it go out of control. But we are saying that there can be a proper place for many different types of discipline, spanking among them. And you shouldn't be afraid if that's what you feel is best in your family situation. Let's move on to the next question. I know that probably second to that, and it may be a different group asking it, but a lot of parents are concerned not about going to jail or Junior going to jail, but they're concerned about Junior walking away from his faith.
Yeah, I think with good reason, because the statistics back that up, that they are walking away from their faith. And a lot of people think that it starts in college, when in actuality, it starts in junior high. Kent Ham wrote a book called Already Gone. And the premise of the book is that if you're sitting in your church pew and you look to your left, you look to your right, and you see someone seventh grade, eighth grade on up, that in a few years, they won't be there because right now, they have already checked out. They're already gone. The number one reason the kids are leaving the church is because of Sunday school, believe it or not, youth group. We're teaching our kids Bible stories as opposed to historical accounts of. Very often, our Sunday school teachers are volunteers who maybe don't even look at the lesson until the morning of, or maybe the night before. For those who are professional youth workers, they're pressured to raise the numbers. You know, the senior pastor sees a youth group as being successful because the numbers are going up. Well, the numbers may need to go down first before that group is successful.
I'll say pizza can bring those numbers up really fast, but it's not bringing anyone to heaven any faster.
No, and that's why the average new convert to Christianity in the youth ages is 8 to 11 weeks. And they come in expecting, they're wanting to really learn something about the deeper truths of life. And they get 5 minutes of Bible and 55 minutes of bells and whistles and pizza parties. And every youth worker I've ever talked to about this, and I bring these same things up time after time, and they look at me like, you're right, and you're right. And yet, there's an old saying, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And right now, what we're getting are kids, exploring, the ones that do explore, they don't last very long. And the ones that have been established in church because their parents started, they're kind of seeing through some of the hypocrisy and some of the ineffective ways of teaching the truths of God and His Word. And they're just being enticed big time by all the carnal pleasures the world has to offer today. And it's the path of least resistance. They choose to go that direction.
For a quick side note into what we talk about all the time here, and that is the dangers of the digital invasion.
Right.
I see so many adults and kids in church with their smartphones or their tablets or whatever. I confess, I actually carry, I've told the story, I have a now disconnected smartphone that I use as just a personal data device, but I've got the Bible on it. And I carry it with me because it's a lot easier than carrying a large Bible.
A lot of people are doing that.
And so sometimes that's what I've got in Sunday school. Sometimes I've got a print Bible, but quite often I've got that and I can make notes in it and whatnot. But the problem that I see is the number of people sitting in the pew at church who are texting while the sermon's going on. And I hate to say it, our pastors are sometimes equally to blame. It amazes me the number of pastors who say, and hey, tweet this or hey, tweet that. It's like, I appreciate the fact that you're trying to use the social media platform to get your message out, but shouldn't your congregants be sitting there participating in the service rather than acting as your media liaison?
Yeah, you would think, but maybe things are going in a totally different direction in the new millennium. I don't know, but I think that the people who are genuinely looking at their smartphones for biblical content, they're kind of running interference for some of the youth that are would like to think they're on the units for Bible when in fact they're texting or sexting a friend. And don't think that doesn't go on in church.
Well,
it does, unfortunately.
We can do a whole separate program on that. Let me move on to the next question, which I think is tied to it. A parent wants to know how they can better interact with their kids to help communicate a biblical worldview to them, to teach them to have a biblical worldview.
Well, Rich, I think it starts with limiting some of the garbage that they allow their kids to see and hear and engage in. And, one of the simplest things I can think of is, what's the first thing that families usually do when they jump in their car? After the ignition, it's very often the radio, or the CD player or whatever. And I'm not saying that we have to totally abandon our secular entertainment or anything like that. But I think occasionally it would be nice to listen to a message, listen to the Bible on CD, a Chuck Swindoll, a Charles Stanley, a Chip Ingram, a licensed parent, you know, once in a while, just to mix it up a little bit.
That's called shameless self-promotion, by the way.
It is. It absolutely is, guilty as charged. But I think that helps. I think, you know, there are a lot of conferences and seminars out there,
sure.
Apologetic seminars like Truth for a New Generation, and many others that that offer a chance for families, entire families, to go off and learn a little about apologetics. There are plenty of books and video series that kids can be watching, and maybe parents could say, "Listen, you know, if you want an hour of your video game a day, then we're going to require an hour of this particular." Apologetic series, a Truth Project from Focus on the Family would be one I can think of.
Yep, that's really good.
Hell's Bells, an expose on music from Eric Holmberg. Again, I'm going to self-promote our DVD series.
Captivated.
Captivated.
Yep.
Any number of things. And then have your kids write just maybe a paragraph summary of what they listened to or watched that day. We live in a time when there's 24-hour access to a postmodern worldview and to an antichrist worldview. And so we're going to have to be a lot more intentional about exposing the flaws and fallacies behind a lot of the things that our kids are seeing.
Yeah.
And then when they are watching a sitcom or a movie in the home or even at the theater, it would be wise to pause that, get TiVo and pause that sitcom and say, why is that not reality, or why is that wrong, or what would you do in this situation, Junior, and how does that line up according to a biblical worldview? These are called teachable moments, and we have got to be intentional about looking for these teachable moments because they escape us regularly, and once they're gone, you know, they're gone until another one comes up, and we have to be able to recognize that one. Deuteronomy 6, 6, and 7,
yeah.
These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts, and it's talking about two parents for their children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. That implies pretty much
all the
as
time.
You go. It's kind of like the Great Commission. You know, as you go, preach the gospel, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Always, all the time. It needs to be an integral part of our life and our day.
And I think, therefore, for us as parents, to bring it back to the moment, as parents then, we need to be teaching these things by talking about them, but also living them.
Got you.
Explaining as we live. It's like, you know, wow, I know I did that. You know, as a son, as a believer, I can't make that same decision. I think we're going to do this instead because I think this would be more honoring
and the
to Christ.
Exactly. And the tremendous degree of security that brings a kid when he realizes that his parent is submitting to an authority higher than himself.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how valuable that is. And modeling, you know, more is caught than taught. Your actions speak so loudly. They can't hear what you're saying. I'm using a lot of cliches here, but they have got to model this. Otherwise, what they teach them doesn't really stick. And I purposely went back to Deuteronomy 6, 6, and 7 and focused on the word impress. Impress these things on your children. That's part of it. It doesn't say teach them to your children. It says impress them on your children. Indelibly implant these things. And so much of that involves modeling it.
Right. I hate to say it, we've only made it through three questions so far, but we're going to take a break. I can see the sweat just beating up on Trace's brow.
297 to go.
Yeah. We do have a lot to go, and we are not going to be covering all of these questions in one program. In fact, through the month of January, we're going to try to unpack a few more of them. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and be right back. This is Licensed to Parent.
Everywhere we go, we're surrounded by screens. Have we entered into a techno-utopia?
Or a virtual prison? Prison.
Is our social experience richer and deeper?
Or more shallow?
And artificial?
Discover insightful answers to these questions in the documentary DVD, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. You'll learn from media experts, church leaders, and inspiring individuals and families from across the country, including Trace Embry and students from Shepherd's Hill Academy. Most importantly, you'll discover how God's Word addresses the unique media challenges we face today. captivated, finding freedom in a media captive culture. Available in the store at licensedtoparent.org. Proceeds benefit the Shepherd's Hill Academy Scholarship Fund.
Hello, this is Dave Barton of Wall Builders. You know, history repeatedly validates the many benefits of an authentic biblical worldview. The Licensed to Parent radio broadcast helps restore that worldview back into the hearts and minds of today's parents, and Shepherd's Hill Academy successfully demonstrates that troubled teens and their parents can still experience the abundant life while being fully equipped to win back our culture to biblical truth. The Licensed to Parent broadcast teaches timeless biblical principles and answers that are lived out every day at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Both demonstrate that a biblical worldview provides guiding principles that work successfully every time they're applied.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit licensedtoparent.org.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us today for Licensed to Parent with our host, Trace Embry, the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy, and I'm Rich Rosel. And as we've mentioned, the questions that we're dealing with today and for the next few weeks come from, in part, some parents' weekends that have been held here at Shepherd's Hill Academy. And these are questions, real questions from real parents trying to decide what their approach should be when raising their kids. And Trace, this next question has to do with the subject of lying. Mm. And, you know, in our family, we have put this on the top of the list. And I've said to my kids, listen, you may really mess up and you may do something that breaks a lot of rules. But if you're caught doing that, come clean.
Yeah.
I said, you may get in trouble for doing these things. In fact, you probably will, but you will get in far more trouble if you lie to me about it.
Right.
Because lying is where trust is broken.
Boy.
So we had a question. Many parents may not give due concern to the sin of lying. And so a parent said, why do you think lying is a bigger deal than many of us realize?
Well, largely because we're never more like the devil than when we're sinning. I mean, just devil's the father of lies. I can tell you this, like your house, lying was the unpardonable sin in our place, you know, figuratively speaking. I mean, it was the thing that our kids knew that the atom bomb of discipline was coming down if you got caught lying. And they knew there'd be consequences for, you know, derelict behavior. But if I got the truth, if I didn't have to go digging for the truth, it was always going to be so much lighter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and by the way, I'm surprised how many parents just expect their kids to lie. You know, what do you expect them to say? You expect them to tell me that he's doing drugs? You know, and my answer is like, maybe I'm naive or something, but yeah, if you ask them and if you've trained them from a young age to tell you the truth, when they get their hand caught in the cookie jar, then they have to say, yeah, my hand's caught in the cookie jar. The problem is too many parents go ballistic when Junior fesses up, and we have to train ourselves that when Junior fesses up to something he's done, then you handle it in a very controlled, calm way, and he's more likely than to tell you the truth.
And but, confession is the first step toward repentance. If you want to see change, accept that. Again, it doesn't mean without consequence, but you've got to be able to let them confess freely.
That's exactly right. And you know, you mentioned two steps to healing, basically three steps to healing, but you mentioned the first two, confession, repentance, and forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, without truth involved in the equation, where's their forgiveness?
Sure.
You know, but lying, it just breaks down communication, period. And when you break down communication, of course, you break down relationships, and relationships are the heartbeat of who we are as people. So we want to, not only do we want our kids to tell us the truth, but we want to tell our kids the truth all the time, too, because that gives them a tremendous degree of respect, security. We're back to the security thing, which is very important to kids. And kids are very resilient. You know, Dad, did you do drugs when you were, you know, this age? Dad, did you do this? Well, you know what? You don't have to get into every single detail, but you can say yes, and you might even say, or no, or whatever the case may be. And you might say, but That's not something I'm proud of, and I don't really think we need to get into the details, but I want to tell you I did that, and we'll leave it at that.
Personal story from my experience with my kids. I mean, I'm the first to admit that I mess up regularly.
No, they watch me mess up.
Set your clock by it. It's like, oh, here goes Dad again. Mm-hmm. But I do mess up, but I've tried to make it a point always to let my kids know when I've messed up and to apologize for my mistakes and for my sins and to ask forgiveness and to at least say, listen, I really blew it. I want to demonstrate, I want to model for them how they need to behave back to me and to others. It's like, you know, look, no one expects you to be perfect. God doesn't expect you to be perfect. That is the mark that has been set for us.
Right.
Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. But while that was said, Christ knew that we were yet still sinners. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to make it there. And my kids know that I have failed to make that mark frequently.
I can tell you from my experience, as I'm sure you can too, Rich, some of the greatest, the tenderest moments in our relationship with our kids is when we have to ask their forgiveness for when we do something that is not right or we went over the top with something. I remember when my daughter was, she was probably 6 years old, and she deserved a spanking. You know, I gave her a couple shots on the backside with a little short fishing rod, okay? And I didn't realize that
the fiberglass hook was still in it. Oh, no.
Yeah, almost as bad. I didn't realize that the end had split. And it made a mark on her, and I felt so bad about that, you know. But kids are very resilient, as I said, and it really, when your little subordinate child there sees your big daddy come and beg your forgiveness and hug on you, those kids, they just, it's like relationship on steroids. They just love it that you would be man enough or woman enough to come back to them and say, you know what, I messed up, will you forgive me? Nothing like it. It's a tremendous relationship builder.
That's great. That's great. Well, I think our time is up and then some for today's program. Again, this is the first of several programs in which we are covering some of the top questions that are preeminent in parents' minds and or most challenging in parents' minds. Questions that have come through the gates here at Shepherd's Hill Academy that we're trying to export to you here on the Licensed to Parent program. And Trace, we will reconvene in a week. So brush up.
Okay.
If you'd like to find out more about the Licensed to Parent program and perhaps catch some of our past programs in the archives, you'll find all of that on our website at licensedtoparent.org. And while you're there, I would encourage you as we start the new year to consider how you might become a ministry partner of Licensed to Parent. This outreach cannot continue without the gifts of God's people, people just like you who are willing to step out either with a one-time gift or a monthly gift to help us keep this ministry going both to troubled teens and their families. Your tax-deductible gifts do go to the Shepherd's Hill Scholarship Fund, and you can give tax-free when you donate online by clicking the Donate button at licensedtoparent.org. This is Rich Rosel for Trace Embry, inviting you to join us again next time when once again you can renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.